This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Good morning, folks. Hope that you had a great weekend and happy Cinco de Mayo today. Hope you have some plans for this afternoon, but just be safe. We've got a great show lined up for you today. We're going to visit with Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We'll talk about merchants now adding credit card surcharges to your bill. When does it actually make sense now to pay cash, and are the frequent flyer points worth utilizing that credit card? We'll talk about how the GDP has shrunk in the first quarter of this year. Are we in a recession? What does that mean? What do job numbers mean for rate cuts? Student loan payments are now due. What is the downstream implication of same? Just to name a few of the topics that we'll talk about. Amanda Schroeder, President, Communities and Schools Gulf South, a nonprofit focused on supporting kids to help them stay in school and succeed. We'll talk with Amanda at 11:30. Dr. Jenna Avegno joins us at 11. We'll talk about the first measles case of 2025 and what that means for our area. I wanted to talk about a couple of things this morning, and we've got the entire hour. So anytime that you want to call in, 504-260-1870 to talk about any issue that's top of mind for you, please do so. And we will try to address that. I was reading an article over the weekend. I took Friday off and was out over the weekend. About a piece of legislation that was introduced by council members Helena Moreno and Leslie Harris. I don't know. Let me put it this way. I think these are both well-intentioned individuals that are trying to protect some people's lives, but the devil's in the details where the rubber meets the road. Any cliche that you want to apply to it, and any time that they say that we're making our city safer, that should create pause for us, and we should look at it a little more closely. And what they did is they introduced three, amendments to the code of the city of New Orleans to provide immunity from arrest and prosecution relative to certain prostitution-related offenses for persons who report a crime, assist law enforcement in the prosecution of crime, or seek health care services as a result of a crime, to limit the admissibility of evidence to include condoms, other prophylactics, and as evidence of certain criminal activity. And it's kind of very loosely connected. It's loosely written. And typically you see this as the beginning of this move to actually legalize prostitution, is what you've seen in other areas of the country. I don't know that that's either of these council members' thought process, idea, where they want to see this end up or otherwise. But any time that you don't have and you're piecemealing these policy positions as it relates to this, you get in trouble. And many other cities have tried to do this, and I have yet to see a place where it has worked out in the best interest of the community at large ever. In fact, to the contrary, it doesn't. And it doesn't for a whole lot of reasons, a whole host of reasons. And, you know, in an article that was posted about this, I think they even mentioned some of the cities that they thought that this had actually worked in. And I was kind of curious, so I went and looked at those cities, and that's not exactly what had happened. And I think Chicago was one, and there were some others that were quoted. Baltimore may have been one. But anyway, whether they did or they didn't, it doesn't matter. What happens, though, is when you go look at those cities, this is what you find. What you find are progressive leaders that are saying that if prostitution is decriminalized, sex work will no longer be driven into the shadows, the bowels of society. And prostitutes will more likely report brutal attacks by clients to police, which means and equates to less violence in the streets. Sounds good. You see some of this same language. Whereas the criminalization of sex work often creates an environment where sex workers are vulnerable to exploitation, violence, and fear of legal repercussions that can prevent the reporting of crimes or seeking of medical assistance, a lack of access to legal protection leaves sex workers in a precarious position, unable to report crimes without risking their own safety and or arrest, as well as discouraging individuals from accessing needed medical care, on and on and on and on. This is the problem. The moment that you become less restrictive, the moment that you kind of diminish what the overall flavor of your ordinances and otherwise dealing with sex workers, the more brazen they become and the more difficult it is for law enforcement. And today's world is not like it was back in the 2000s, right? I mean, we have a migrant situation, a nationwide migrant crisis going on right now. We've actually exacerbated sex trafficking in this country because of our border policies, whether we want to admit that or not. And we have put law enforcement behind the proverbial eight ball. And when you see pieces of legislation like this that seek to squelch or diminish the ability of how they deal with sex workers and information that they have available to them for other crimes, and that, in fact, in this city, they say now you shall charge under a city ordinance and not a state statute, which diminishes outcomes, you are now less than. I get that you're looking out for sex workers and the fact that they are in a very risky business. They put themselves out there in a very risky way. You know, these are not, you have sex workers of all sorts, you know, cam operators, phone sex operators. You have less client contact in a lot of manners in which they engage in this. And then you have your street-based sex operators, which is what we're talking about here. And in large measure, these individuals are otherwise what? Yeah, you guessed it. Drug addicts. Right? And what you see across this country where you begin to create an environment of lax enforcement, providing these immunities, and things of that nature, you see problems. You see neighborhoods lost. Because when there's less enforcement, right, they're likely to take their clients to safer areas to work and operate, like where response time is greater, right? And if I can't arrest that individual because that individual was slapped around by a client, and therefore they have all kinds of immunities as a result thereof. Meanwhile, their sex operation is still going on, right, in your neighborhood, in your backyard. The degradation that occurs to your community becomes overwhelming. And you've seen this over and over and over again in community after community after community. Neighborhoods lost because of this. It happened in Baltimore, Marilyn Mosby, as the DA there. She kind of took a lax approach to all of these misdemeanor cases, so to speak. But, you know, you hear this a lot about drug addiction and sex workers are just typically, you know, a one-person problem. They don't have that impact on community. Does anybody really believe that any longer? Do you? I don't. Do we really believe that the user is the only problem that we have in our community when we have drug addiction? Do we really believe that sex workers in our community, it's only a one-person problem? They've chose this life for themselves, and if they have a drug addiction on top of it, they're the only ones impacted by it? Do we really believe that as well? No, we don't believe that, right? And we have evidence of it. I remember at one point in time, when I was the chief deputy as well as sheriff, we were having issues on the Veterans Highway hotels. We had neighbors close to those hotels complaining. They were seeing the prostitutes out in the parking lot. We actually passed legislation in Jefferson Parish to allow the hotel operators, mandate hotel operators, to provide information to us when they openly saw what was going on their property. Of course, they're financially benefiting, that they were required to inform us. Why? Because we had shootings there. We had vehicle thefts there. We had auto burglaries there. We had fights there. We had all kinds of issues that were in the parking lots of these establishments just directly adjacent to some really nice neighborhoods and neighborhoods throughout Jefferson Parish. It was a problem. It wasn't a one-person problem. It was a multi-level problem. And then when they started to see their OC rates go down and be replaced by sex workers, then they wanted to cry uncle about, you know, well, there's no enforcement going on here. We got a problem. No, you facilitated this model. You are now suffering the consequences of this model, and you're not able to get the day rates that you want or the OC rates that you want because you decided in the downturn of an economy or otherwise that you were going to help facilitate this economy. You're going to suffer the consequences of these actions unless you play nice with law enforcement. Now, this may seem overreaching, may seem pretty aggressive, but not if you lived in, not if your backyard backed up to the parking lot of that hotel. Not if you had an auto dealership next door. Not if you had a furniture store there. Not if you had a restaurant a half a block down. Or not if you had a public park literally 300 feet away from that hotel. It became everybody's problem. Everybody's problem. And I just throw this caution out that before we really go down this and we start restricting as to how police can charge and this and that and everything else, it might be better served to maybe give the DA some discretion. And let's see how that works out. But the collection of intelligence information out on the streets, we should not be protecting violators of the law to the extent that they're create an environment that they're unwilling and know they can take advantage of some of these immunities that are being provided and not communicate with the police. You know, it's the same one-size-fits-all approach that we try all the time that doesn't work very well ever. Sounds great. Looks like that, and as I said before, I'm sure they are sincere in their effort in bringing this forward. I would love to have known how much communication there was with law enforcement on these issues. But you want to lose the quarter real quick? Start relaxing sex worker legislation. Start right there and see how fast you're going to lose it. Start right there and see how fast you're going to lose all of the neighborhoods directly adjacent to it. Start right there and see if it's not if it won't start happening in Lakeview. Start right there and see if you drive down Lakeshore Drive, if you're not going to see it happen in multiple automobiles on a short stint driving down that street. It's what you're seeing in Baltimore. It's what you're seeing in Philadelphia. It's what you're seeing in Chicago, where now there's been a hue and cry in those neighborhoods to turn this around. Because one thing for certain is violence isn't going to go down because of this. One thing for certain, they're going to start advertising in your local newspaper. That's what's happening in these other communities. You're going to find out that someone is doing this on your street. You're going to find out all kinds of things. And then what you're really going to find out, and is going to be the slap in your face, is that you could very well be impotent until the next election. Because there is a strong activist group that supports this legislation for the purposes of sex workers. But what you don't find in this legislation is taxes being paid, occupational license taxes, health certificates being necessary, location restrictions, things of that nature. It all starts with these small little intrusions, looking out for the interests of the sex worker, and then it begins to expand, because that's how it happened in every other city. I don't know that that's their intention, but I think it's worthy of the caution. Love to hear what you think. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We'll be right back.
On my podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, we share the keys to succeed in business and in life. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed and Odyssey Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Back, folks, stay with us. So we've been talking about this proposed legislation at the New Orleans City Council by council members Moreno and Harris as it relates to sex workers and protection for sex workers and limiting options that police have in their investigations. And we have a caller, Mole, is on the line. Mole, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. First of all, I want to acknowledge that, you know, legislation laws regarding this are definitely a slippery slope, and I understand your concerns. But there are some facts, I'm sure you're aware of them, you know, as far as especially these women that are out, you know, basically in public walking streets and stuff like that. They are at least, I think, 10, if not quite a few more times likely to be abducted and murdered as just a regular person. So there is, you know, the safety concerns, and a lot of these women are being trafficked. They don't really want to be in this position. And, you know, these men and even other women that take advantage of them, manipulate them, and oftentimes they're afraid of the legal consequences that are being inflated by these people that, you know, are acting as their agents, you know, unlawfully, obviously. And, you know, this isn't called the oldest profession for no reason. This has been going on since we had money, or maybe even before that. And you're not going to stop it. I would think that, you know, the best thing would be to have a discussion with, you know, law enforcement, you know, or former law enforcement like yourself, these legislators, the social workers and frontline therapy type stuff that deal with these people, you know, to, you know, help them get out of this line of work. And, you know, if you're going to regulate it in such a way that it's safer for the people that choose to engage in it, as well as their clients, and eliminate this black market aspect of this. I don't recommend that this is a good choice for anyone, you know, a worker or a client, but it's their choice. And it's not our duty or our government's duty to legislate morality. It's to make sure that, you know, that we're safe and, you know, mitigate and minimalize the danger of this activity that people are going to engage in regardless.
But is it most of the criminal code legislating morality? I mean, couldn't you make the same argument for a drug dealer? I'm a drug addict. I'm a drug dealer. I choose the drug trade. It's a dangerous trade. And I choose to sell my drugs in the highest crime areas in the city. Should they be allowed to have some additional protections if they are actually ratting out other drug dealers or other people exploiting people in the drug trade, as long as they're communicating with law enforcement? Should there be immunities for them as well?
Well, it depends on if they're a pharmaceutical company or not, right? Then it's legal.
Well, but there's a whole regulatory side.
I don't have all the answers, Newell, but what I'm saying is have a discussion about it with the people that are experts in it. You're an expert in it from the law enforcement side. There's a whole other side of this. If you're not going to stop it, you may as well try to make the best laws possible to protect everyone. Thank you.
All right. And that's the slippery slope. You're right, Mole. It is a slippery slope. And unfortunately, when you start down this slippery slope, what do? You slip. And who ends up suffering the consequences of government slipping? It's not usually one small defined group, right? It's the community at large. And we've seen this happen over and over and over again. It doesn't lead to less violence. That's not going to happen. We know that. Pick a city, any city. I love when they say this. It all sounds good, right? Prostitution, if decriminalized, sex work will no longer be driven into the bowels of society, into the shadows. And prostitutes will be more likely to report brutal attacks by clients to police, which means less violence. Really? Sounds good. Show me where that happened. Right? Because for every abusive individual that's out there that that they're willing to report in on, they're going to go align themselves with someone that they believe is going to be less abusive. And more often than not, it doesn't quite work out that way, does it? Because we're making bad decisions each and every day. And all we're doing is perpetuating the history of bad decisions made by these individuals over and over and over again. And who suffers in the meantime? The community at large. It happens everywhere. We did away with loitering, right? Loitering statutes, because we wanted to make sure that we had this freedom of movement. You know what belongs in your neighborhood better than anybody. You get frustrated when people can't be moved on. How do they advertise their wares, the sex worker, that is? In some cases, on the internet, on some cases, in chat rooms, in some cases on a street, right? Your street, your public street, the one that you pay taxes to support, your sidewalks, your French Quarter, your Marigny, your Veterans Highway, your Jefferson Highway, your 4th Street in Marrero and Harvey, under the bridge in Avondale, all areas that historically have been a problem for law enforcement that we had to get in and root it out to the best of our ability, continue to put pressure. We're not going to eliminate it. We all know that. But we want to create a safe harbor for who? Everyone else. This notion that we have that we're creating a safe harbor for sex workers is not found in practice. It doesn't work that way. Because they are engaged in a culture and in a community that's not only about sex. It's about a lot of other things that go along with it that are very dangerous characteristics that we are fighting in our community each and every day. Why they would put this subsection in here? This subsection does not apply to outstanding federal warrants. Well, that's because you can't do that. That would be against the Constitution. Or outstanding warrants issued from other states, can't do that, right? Because same reason. Or for warrants unrelated to a crime for which immunity is provided in this section. Well, that makes sense because you don't want to give them immunity for all other crimes. But what they don't say is, what about a JP warrant in Orleans? What about state warrants? It doesn't apply to other states, but what they're saying is they're not going to honor a detainer, for example. Love to know that answer to that question. For prostitution of somebody who may be in jail. Is that addressed here? Doesn't seem so. They prohibit the NOPD from charging under the state statute. They mandate a less restrictive statute, the Code of Ordinance, Municipal Code of Ordinance, to charge these individuals. Why? Why would we do that? How does that make anybody less safe to charge under the state? We're afraid to give anybody else any jurisdiction, right? We want to be able to control exactly what's going to happen, right? And we're going to do so under the auspices of this is going to make everybody safer. That's bull. And as I said, I'm sure they're well-intentioned, and I'm sure they're listening to their constituents that are advocating on their own best self-interests. Meanwhile, while they're hawking clients on the streets of our city, go walk down in a quarter. Go walk down, you know, in any number of different areas. The likelihood is you're going to get hawked. Is that what we want? Because that's what we're going to get. And as we move further and further down this path, there's no controlling it after that. You've given the crack in the door, and the door is going to get blown wide open. Why? The obvious. There's big money in this. There's easy money in this. Thankfully, most people won't do it. Thankfully, it has a stigma. And again, in the justification of these types of legislation, it's really interesting that they continue to use the word, this reduces fear in the community. You know, a lot of the activists that are quoted, it reduces fear in the community. That's the basic premise of the criminal code. is the fear of apprehension and incarceration. That's deterrence. That's the only tool that motivates the perpetuation of the criminal law in this country, is that hopefully people fear getting arrested, getting caught, and being put in jail. And when you remove that fear, can we connect this dot? Have we thought about that? Or is that this is a single choice? And like I said, like drug addiction, sex workers, it's only a one-person problem? Please, please don't tell me that. We're losing the heart and the soul of our communities across this country because we have lost sight of the downstream implications of what we are doing. It doesn't take much to connect these dots. How about we connect them? Love to hear from you. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. So Sheriff Susan Hudson wins by an overwhelming vote of confidence as to what she's been doing in her first term. Two votes. The last tax initiative that she went out on failed miserably. This one, which was a renewal of a millage that a number of folks, including myself, not that that means anything, but a number of folks in the law enforcement related fields and likewise supported the continuation of this tax. This is a mandate. And it's not the mandate that Sheriff Susan Hudson wants you to believe, that this renewal is a reaffirmation of our shared commitment to building a stronger, safer, and more just Orleans Parish. There's too many receipts, Sheriff, for you to even say that. This is a candidate, when running for office 4 years ago, said that the size of the jail needs to be between 400 and 500 because we have too many residents. Not inmates, residents in the jail. The jail's now, I think, somewhere between 1350 and 1400 are in there. And we asked the question why crime is going down. Wonder. Let me scratch my head on that one, right? This sheriff had to go out and respond to what people were saying that this was a new tax. Had to go out there and say it's not a new tax. Why? Because she didn't want to really put herself out there because she's running for re-election because she was going to get beat up, and rightfully so, because the first 4 years she's treated this office as though she's running a not-for-profit that supports her ideological bent and that she is not a good steward and has not been a good steward of public money, not by any stretch of the imagination. And there's example after example after example. There's mix-ups, screw-ups, slip-ups, lack of priority, understanding where you fit in the overall system. There have been some initiatives that she's involved herself in where she did a great job. I give her credit where credit's due. But those are few and far between. And it doesn't mean that you're actually a good sheriff. So this two-vote margin, and let's hope it stands up, because it'll be disastrous if they end up losing roughly 20% of their operating budget, generates about $13.1 million annually for this office. And, you know, this proposal, as I said, was supported by a number of people. It needed to pass. There's no doubt about that. Because we would be less safe without those dollars necessary to operate that jail, especially at 1,400 inmates, right? And quite frankly, it's going to get tougher. I think we're going to begin to see a little bit of a turn nationally in crime stats. Kind of been paying close attention to that and watching it very closely as to what's happening. There's a little bit of a feeling that we're getting here locally. We'll see what the trends are. Hopefully we continue in a very positive way. But I've always been suspicious, even when I had and was in that office. I watched those numbers very closely to see what was actually happening out on the streets. We have an opportunity to vote in this race for criminal sheriff in October. And there's already a number of candidates who have announced that they are running. I would encourage you to start looking at those candidates today. This is an incredibly important job, especially as we try to save the future of our community, that we continue the positive momentum and trends that we have. We can't afford the slip-ups, the miscues, the revolving door of administrative staff or otherwise, the creation of programs, and our failure to call things for what they truly are in the hopes of being something else. I don't know about you, but I'm done with that already. And that's what I hear from folks every day. We'll be right back. Folks, when we return, we'll visit with Dr. Jennifer Avegno, director of New Orleans Health Department. We'll talk about the first measles case of 2025 and what that means for our area, as well as Amanda Schroeder, president of Communities and Schools Gulf South, how they support kids to help them stay in school. And Guy Williams will join us at 12 o'clock, President Gulf Coast Bank of Trust, and we have a host of issues to talk about. So stay with us. We'll be right back after the top of the hour news break. This is Newell on WWL.